All right, we're going to get started.
People where I'm from will die.
Good morning, everybody. I'm going to call this meeting of the Sustainable Infrastructure Policy Committee for February 15th, 2023 to order. A quorum is present. The first item on our agenda is approval of the minutes. Representative Ream, can I have a motion to approve the minutes for February 8th, 2023?
So moved.
Representative Ream moves approval of the minutes for February 8th, 2023. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Ooh, that was a hard one. So the first thing on our agenda this morning is a presentation from the Michigan Infrastructure Council. So for those of you who don't know, the MIC was bipartisanly created in 2018 by the Michigan Legislature. The legislature's goal for the MIC was to map out strategic frameworks to address Michigan's critical needs for infrastructure improvement. And the goal has been accomplished through the MIC's core principles of collaboration. And I think this really fits in nicely with the conversations our committee has had about empowering our local partners to better understand and maximize their infrastructure assets. So members, you can find a copy of the presentation in your packets. And Mrs. Keon and Mr. LaRue, please introduce yourselves for the record and begin your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Are you able to hear us?
Yep. Yes, we are.
Great. Go ahead, Ryan. You go first.
All right. Well, it's a pleasure to be here this morning. My name is Ryan LaRue. I am the executive director of the Michigan Infrastructure Council and a former member myself. And with me, I have Erin Kuhn, who I'll let her introduce herself.
Yes. Good morning, everybody. My name is Erin Kuhn. I am a voting member, a governor appointee to the Michigan Infrastructure Council. For my day job, I am the executive director of the West Michigan Shoreline Regional Development Commission, a regional planning and development agency, one of 14 across the state.
So with that, we have a short presentation today where we're going to kind of go through the history of the MIC, what we've been doing since our establishment, and then hopefully hold some time for questions from the group afterwards. So without further ado, I'll kind of just jump in. The first thing that I have here is some of what laid the foundation for the MIC, and I don't want to dive too deeply into this, but prior to being established through legislation, one of the founding efforts that led to the creation of the MIC was the 21st Century Infrastructure Committee, and this was created by executive directive by the former administration here in Michigan, the Snyder administration, recognizing that we'd seen a recent uptick in kind of catastrophic infrastructure failures. And we needed to not just learn how to deal with them better, but learn how to avoid them. So a lot of this was kind of doing that deep dive to look at what was out there in the market, what we weren't tapping into that really provided an opportunity where we could proactively address what we were seeing in the infrastructure space. And through those efforts, we kind of had identified asset management as one of these keys to a prosperous future here in Michigan. So instead of just kind of diving into the deep end of asset management, what we kind of parlayed the Infrastructure Commission into was a pilot report to really determine the feasibility of maybe statewide asset management being handled at through the state departments and in conjunction and working as well. So both of these are the reports you'll see on this slide, and in the slideshow that was sent to the group, these are both linked to the physical documents. So pretty large reports, really get into depth about some of the learnings of those efforts and what laid the foundation. But a lot of that was just understanding that path forward that we saw as being a viable path forward through collaboration and coordination and increased use of asset management. So with the success of those two efforts, we did end up becoming a legislative agency. So in 2018, there was a package of three bills that really stemmed the creation of the Michigan Infrastructure Council. The first was for the Michigan Infrastructure Council itself, and that is Public Act 323 of 2018. And then the other two were our two sister councils that were created alongside us to support our efforts. The Water Asset Management Council, which is housed within our DEQ, and the Transportation Asset Management Council that is housed within our DOT. So these three groups really work in concert here in Michigan to really create a culture of asset management within all of these individual infrastructure silos. And then the MIC is really the glue that brings them together and looks for opportunities to integrate the individual asset class asset management programs and look for ways to further along those through integrated work that looks across assets and really tries to tease out as much value as we can as we're collecting this data and looking for paths forward. So as I had mentioned, these are very strategic in the way that we were created. As I had mentioned, the water asset management is within Eagle, who is our DEQ. Our TAMC, our Transportation Asset Management Council, is within our DOT, and the Michigan Infrastructure Council is here within Treasury. And the placement within Treasury is very strategic, as much as it seems odd on the front end. So what we had realized is when we kind of mix some of this, kind of building a culture of asset management with regulation or oversight, there was a lot of just questions that arose. So instead of putting us within that regulatory scheme of Eagle with our water regulation or that oversight scheme of MDOT, we wanted to be housed in kind of an unbiased third party situation so we could really just get to the core of these and not have that idea of further regulation in the back of our participants' heads or stakeholders' heads. So that's a lot of why we were housed within Treasury, and it's often one of the first things we are asked when people ask about the creation of the MIC. So I'd just like to get out there and really talk about the intention of why we were housed within Treasury. And then I'm going to skip that because it's a video and we don't have too much time. So with that, this video that is included just talks about integrated asset management and John Weiss, who is our chair, giving a little bit of an oversight of what we view integrated asset management is, as it's not just a normal term that you hear every day. So kind of talks about our brand and what we believe integrated asset management to be. But I'll leave that for the group to view on their own. And just kind of for the purposes of this, move forward. And with this, I think I'm going to hand it over to Aaron, who was a key contributor on some of the pilot programs. And this really starts to talk about the landscape in Michigan and kind of sets a tone for where we're heading. So, Aaron, please.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks, Ryan. So here you can see in Michigan across all of our assets, and this was determined through the before the pilot program. We have 3,350 separate asset owners within the state of Michigan. We know it's more now, but really all working in silos and not understanding and not knowing what the other hand is doing, what the other assets are doing. So I'm sure, like you see in Minnesota, there's a lot of duplicate projects that are happening where roads are being reconstructed. They're being cut open the next year to do a water main or the next year to do a private utility. And we really wanted to start breaking down those silos and how we can better work together. So the Michigan Infrastructure Council was created. And the next slide here, Ryan. He's controlling the slides. Here are the council members. I think one thing that is very unique with our council is we have these voting members. We all represent different sectors of infrastructure. So we have private utilities represented. We have small utilities represented. We have public utilities, roads, water. And we bring with us a lot of history coming to the council, but on the next slide, you'll see we have several non-voting members, the department heads from each of these different departments within the state, which really helps us to integrate with the state, helps us to understand what the state is dealing with. We help them understand what we as local asset owners are dealing with, and in my opinion, that's where the magic really happens with what we're doing at the council level. There's very good engagement from these departments, And we've had some really good conversations and been able to accomplish some really cool things at the state level. So we'll move on to the next slide here. Here is our mission. We came up with this first. I'll let you read it. I won't read it to you, but here's us kind of going around giving our spiel and winning some awards for what we're doing here. You mentioned before on the next slide here, we created our goals, which really are around collaborating, coordinating, prioritizing, because we know we can't fix everything first. So how do we prioritize the things that we need to get done now and then into the future? Educating not only the public, but also the legislators, educating the state departments, the asset owners themselves. So education at every level. And also investing. How do we invest in our infrastructure across assets to make sure we're putting that investment where it's making the most impact and makes the most sense? Because we know in asset management, fixing the worst first is not always the best route.
And I'll just add here that one thing you'll see intentionally left out here is compliance and regulation. We did not want to become a compliance or a regulator. We really wanted to become a strategic partner as we tried to move this forward. So as much as like it's not kind of front center here, that was one of our main goals, is to really stay away and stay out of that space and just become a trusted partner where we could build capacity within our local governments and within our asset owners. And through a voluntary effort, we wanted to put something together that was would bring the value proposition itself, would bring people to the table as opposed to unfunded mandates or requirements. So a lot of these goals were really stemmed about how you do that without compliance or mandates on the back end of it. And we really looked at these five goals, if we could do these well, as the way that we could get there. We could have large participation, we could build stakeholders, and do that without the need for compliance and mandates. I think from the state level, we've seen that those have not been incredibly effective over the time, over the previous decades. And we really wanted to move and try something a little bit different and try to really engage and kind of work as a strategic partner, as I had mentioned.
Great. Thanks, Brian. So as in concurrently, when we were developing our mission and goals, we were also going around the state because we know the state, other than roads, really doesn't own a lot of infrastructure. They don't own water infrastructure, drinking water, wastewater. And then we have the private utilities as well. So we wanted to really ask those utility owners at the local level, you know, what are you dealing with on a day-to-day basis? What's working? What's not working? And what can we, through the MIC, do to help you manage your infrastructure? We know that the situation we're in has taken us decades to get to, and it's going to take us decades to get out. So what are some tangible things that they see we can do? And you can see here some of the numbers of the participants that we had, the feedback that we received. And those were really, really successful. And those really helped us identify our main pillars of what we're doing and what we've done over the last 5 years that we've been since we've been created. With that, can you go to the next slide, Ryan? These are our main pillars that we're working on. We've put together an asset management champion program. We'll go into detail, a little bit more detail on that. A Dig Once project portal. So one of the main things we heard from the participants of those workshops was, you know, I don't know who to contact at the private utility to let them know about our projects and find out what their projects are to see if we can collaborate. And that's really what we at a very basic level, the project portal is almost like a dating app. So you have a project and it's in a GIS mapping format. You have a project, two projects that are in a similar area, maybe the same year, maybe a couple years apart. Each of those asset owners gets a ding that tells them there's another potential project within your area. Here's contact information on how you can collaborate. And we know the further lead time we have to those construction dates, the more likely and the easier it is to collaborate on those projects and maybe align funding sources and have all of that happen. So that's something we really wanted to have happen, but that's a very basic idea of what we were looking at there. And then a self-assessment, asset management self-assessment readiness scale to help communities and asset owners identify where they are on their journey in asset management and how to advance and move forward with that. And then one of our legislative requirements is to create a 30-year integrated infrastructure strategy, which we're in the process of doing. Asset Management Champions Program, you can see here, really, that was really a hunger of our asset owners on how do we don't even know where to start with asset management. And what we really want to do is build awareness of what asset management is, develop that knowledge of how they move about their asset management journey, and tie that with our asset management readiness scale. And you can see on the right-hand side the puzzle pieces, and that's really what the program is built around, is people and leadership, data and information, planning and decision-making, policy and governance, and then communication, external and internal communication policies there. But we also wanted to establish a community of champions and have that community have peers that they can reach out to as they're going through their journey. How did you handle this? Or, you know, we were dealing with that issue last year. Dealt with it. So that's something that we're really proud of that we've gone through. And the next slide here shows we are in our fourth class of asset management champions. You can see the dots of where they have come from across the state. With this current class, once this class graduates in early April, we will have, Ryan, correct me, 300 champions, right around 300 champions, and we have established a networking opportunity for them. We bring them together regularly. They can contact each other, and that's something that has really helped us build that culture. And they're all speaking the same language. They understand what they're talking about, and that it's been super, super successful. You want to add anything, yeah, Ryan?
Yeah, I'll just add, as we've kind of gone through this, we like to continuously check in with our 300 graduates. And some of the things that we hear is it's really nice to know I'm not in this alone. I think that a lot of people, like as we talked about siloed, there's a siloed feeling that comes with that, that just kind of feels like you're on an island. And I feel like a lot of what we're hearing from this is just creating that peer group and just creating that culture and just creating a space where you can get information. You can engage with your peers that are dealing with similar situations or have similar regulations. And it just seems like as we're seeing a lot of new turnover and new people entering into the public workspace, having that culture and that community is becoming a very effective tool for them being successful in their job. And it's just something we take great pride in providing to some of our stakeholders. And it's really great to watch after every single class just how much this translates into being beneficial in their day-to-day.
Yes. Next is our asset management readiness scale. And this is tied very closely to the Champions program and what they learned in the Champions program. And this is a tool that is meant to be done very quickly over a lunch hour with a group of people around the table. Mm-hmm. We ask that they have, from that asset, whether it's a local unit of government, have an elected official, the city manager, finance manager, DPW director, boots on the ground folks, coming together, answering these questions, identifying where they are in each one of those puzzle piece areas. And then what happens is they're able to put in notes. They're able to put in where they want to be in years 1, 3, and 5. So they have goals to make, and they understand based on the different levels, levels 1 through 5, what they need to do to get to that next level. And at the end, it spits out spider charts where they can see where their strengths and their weaknesses are at the state level and at the MIC level. Those responses help us know where we need to put additional resources to help with some areas that we might be weak in. And so that, again, that's just, this is something that has been a useful tool. It can be transferred to any asset. So it's not specific to water, drinking water, wastewater, roads. It can be used for buildings. It can be used for parks. It can be used for trees. You name the asset, it can be used for. And so that's something that we're really excited about. And again, we wanted something that wasn't going to be a burden on the communities, something, one more thing that they had to do. It's something that could be done very quickly. And these are some of the results that we've had. We won our, there was a funding opportunity that came out of our state Eagle department, and they used communities that had completed this self-assessment as a tiebreaker to receive funding. So if they had two communities that had, that were tied, one community did the self-assessment, one didn't, that funding went to the one who did. And that helped us collect a lot of these, but also gave some incentives to communities to do that.
Yeah, and I'll just add that this benchmarking, as we were talking about internally, I think that this helps people chart their own path at their own pace. But when it's submitted back to the MIC, we use it for benchmarking and really try to understand where people want to be. Because one of our main goals as we set up our strategic priorities is meeting people where they're at. So this is a great tool for us to understand where people are at and what they're trying to achieve in the next coming years and align a lot of our efforts with that. So on the right, you'll see some of that benchmarking that we have done last year. And this is in the external communication. So what we can do is go back to that AMRS and map out those milestones that exist between these two indicators here, and really start to set up those programs and deliver those programs to help people achieve where they want to be in 3 years and effectively partner with them. So as Aaron had said, it's a great tool internally, but as we look at the value of it externally, it really makes sure that we're delivering on the needs and expectations of our stakeholders as well. I can take this one, Aaron. So as we mentioned earlier, one of the things is always going back and looking for continuous improvement through our projects and through any of the programs that we put out. So through our AM Champions, through the first four courses, we've really been looking at metrics to understand what we're doing well and how we can do things better. And just as we benchmark ourselves against kind of the industry, we are right up there with education and training as far as what we're seeing as our net promoter score, which at a very high level is how likely are you to recommend this course to a friend or colleague. And I think another very interesting statistic that we're capturing is about 33% of our last class came from a referral from a previous graduate. So I think that we take that as meaning that not only was there great value to the participant, but they see an opportunity for their peers to really excel and gain some great knowledge through this. So we're not only just helping individuals, but we're helping them build a team internally by using referrals to make sure that like others within their organization have access to this information as well too. So I think that that's one of those statistics we look at as a real telling metric about how this program is being received and the value that we're seeing our participants leverage this in the future to build their team and kind of build that community for us without little outreach. So we're kind of seeing this into be a self-sustaining program based on our participants, as opposed to one that we have to significantly market over and over. So I can also go into the Dig Once portal because this is kind of my bread and butter on my day-to-day currently. So as we had mentioned in the earlier, as we went around the state, we were asking people what some of the barriers to better coordination were. And some of them, they didn't even have the beginnings of an asset management program where they knew what that was in the ground, what their assets were, where they were located. But then there were others that had already kind of gone on this journey and were wondering how they could communicate this out effectively to facilitate greater coordination and collaboration. So what we had really identified as an opportunity here was to standardize the approach to collaboration here within the state. So what we had heard is collaboration was happening, but often in an ad hoc manner. So every time that two projects came up, two people would reach out, they would kind of go through their own internal process, and they would get things done, but there was a lot, it was a clunky kind of mess, for lack of better words. So what we were looking at is trying to build a standardized process that took the good parts of what people were already doing and applied them into a framework from which we could build and we could teach. So the Michigan Dig Once portal is a GIS system that is developed and run by the Michigan Department of Treasury here at the MIC. And what we do is we aggregate long-term capital improvement plans from local governments, private utilities, and state agencies all into one map for the purposes of both temporal and spatial analysis. As Aaron had mentioned earlier, sometimes you have projects that are planned in the same area of right away at the same time, and you're seeing two people show up with shovels on the same week. And at that point, there's not too many opportunities for coordination and collaboration. You just kind of have to figure it out. So one of our goals was to identify those instances years in advance and look for opportunities where maybe we could share traffic control, maybe excavation costs could be shared amongst those, and getting to that coordination where we could kind of look at better leveraging the workforce, maybe better leveraging some of the economies of scale that can come when you expand out projects to kind of include multiple opportunities, and really just give an opportunity and a standardized way in which different utilities operating in silos across the state could effectively and securely share data that was necessary for the collaboration process. So I love the idea that this is a dating app, because it is essentially what it is. It almost uses the same algorithm. You know where this project is, when it's happening, what its interests are, and then you can really, once those data sets are in a similar database, those synergies can be identified and communicated out to the necessary stakeholders. So really leveraging technology to further this collaboration need and simplify this collaboration need with the hope that it just becomes business as usual. If we can get it simple enough, I think that that is our end goal. So similar to all of our programs, we continue to iterate and look for that and communicate with our early adopters and try to do just find ways forward that make this more simple for us moving forward.
Right. And it can help minimize the disruption to the public that are moving through those spaces as well. And it can help us in the long run to track cost savings on collaboration, because we know you can receive significant cost savings when you do coordinate across assets. But this will help us put a true number and be able to track that well into the future as well.
Yep. So the cost effectiveness, the safety of having less construction. I think construction is always a safety concern for those that are doing the construction and those that are on the road. So having fewer opportunities for safety incidents with construction is another benefit that we see. And reliability. I think that as we were seeing all these cuts that go through newly paved roads, there's a quick degradation that comes with all of those cuts that is unnecessary and can be avoided. So we're hoping to keep our roads longer standing, more reliable by instituting less cuts as well. So one of the key components of that moving forward as we have this major investment in roads here in Michigan.
So one of the things I mentioned earlier that we are legislatively required to do is put together a 30-year integrated infrastructure strategy. We're in the process of doing that right now. And again, we're holding true to the fact that we're not only working at the state level, but we're trying to meet the needs and look at the future of the infrastructure at the local level as well. So we have engaged our champions, our graduated champions, in helping us gather feedback on what we need to do well into the future for this 30-year strategy. We're also going around the state doing 8 workshops coming up here in April and May, again, to talk about strategies and gather input from the local level. but looking at all, you know, how do we, again, it's integrated asset management, it's integrated infrastructure. How do we look at all of these assets across those silos? Again, trying to break down those silos to make sure we're making the most impact and we're all working in the same direction and understand where we want to go and how we do that.
All right, so that kind of ends our presentation, and I'm happy to turn it over, Anna, to the group for questions.
Thank you. So members, questions, I'm gonna go back to the Dig Once portal project slide. Have you already, you know, it's only been a few years since you guys have implemented this. Have you been able to see any kind of cost savings already when it comes to, you know, getting those infrastructure projects done?
Yeah, I will say that during the pilot process, one of the very first things that we wanted to do was capture those cost savings and put that value proposition out as a way to draw people into the system. So I believe that, like, we have preliminary numbers that say 10 to 30% is typically what you are able to save in an infrastructure project based on the complexity and things along those lines. So I think that that value proposition that we're currently working out, we're trying to refine and kind of bring more data in to refine and stand up, is around 10 to 30% is what we're expecting to see in collaborative infrastructure delivery.
Wow. Thank you. Representative Kraft?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to our presenters. I have a few questions. One, there was a mention, and I think it was touched on at the beginning, but I didn't quite get it, but someone said there's a situation, and talking with the, I think, the asset managers, the situation we're in has taken decades to get into and will take decades to get out of. Can you talk more about the situation that you're referring to?
Yeah, that is the condition of our infrastructure is failing, and that's happening at every level, whether it's drinking water, wastewater, roads, and we don't have enough money to fix it. And it's not that the way that it was managed in the past was wrong. It's just that we didn't know what we didn't know, and it's taken us decades of not investing what needed to be invested to maintain the infrastructure that we have. And mismanagement, because again, we didn't know what we didn't know, and it's going to you. That's not anything you can fix overnight. There's not enough money to fix it all overnight. So it's going to take baby steps, changing a culture, changing how we manage that infrastructure. And that infrastructure is in the ground, especially the drinking water wastewater pipes. I mean, they last 100 years. When we did the pilot project, we were gathering data, and we had pipes that were, or data that was given to us on pipes that were from the late 1800s. So, you know, in some communities know where their assets are, some don't. So, and let alone the age, when they were, what their material is, the condition they're in, it's going to take a lot of time to get a good handle on that, and then right the ship to make sure we have good, reliable infrastructure.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Talk about how the Asset Management Champions Program. You know, assets is kind of a global term, maybe a bit nondescript. Do you group people that come to the program by type of asset they're managing, or how do you, because you may have, if you're just talking assets, you may have people in a training that are managing vastly different types of infrastructure.
Yeah, no, we do not class them or group them by class, because we want them to understand, again, we're talking integration, crossed assets. So we want to make sure somebody who's handling a water system understands what's going on, and somebody that is specifically in roads, and then how can they work together? And they're taught the same language. So having them understand all of that, speaking the same language, working across and breaking down those silos. And that's something that's very important to us. So we make sure we have that cross collaboration.
Representative Kraft.
And education.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So I'm interested in your view of this, of what has happened that wouldn't or couldn't have happened otherwise.
Ms. Kuhn?
I don't think I understand the question. I'm sorry.
So in managing your infrastructure in Michigan, you know, so there's lots of things here, but you know, you exist now, this Michigan Infrastructure Council. So what's happening really differently that wouldn't have happened or couldn't have happened otherwise for your?
I think breaking down those silos, and people just didn't talk to other asset owners in the past. And I think, again, this is, we're only 5 years old, so it's really hard to have major impacts. But I think the fact within 5 years, but I think the fact that we're going to have 300 champions coming up here in April that all understand and have the same vocabulary of asset management and how to work together is a huge win. The fact that we have communities talking about asset management, they weren't talking about asset management prior to us. Maybe one or two, some of the more sophisticated communities, yes, they were. But the smaller communities in the more rural areas were not. And so I think that's a huge win that we're you know, people are talking about asset management. COVID really also, it was hard to get out and about and make a huge impact. But I think, you know, we pivoted very quickly with our Champions program and moved it all online. And again, that's been highly successful in having 300 champions.
And I will add to that.
Go ahead, Mr. LaRue.
Yeah, I was just going to add, I think that one thing that we're seeing is asset management was something we often saw as a means to get a grant from the state or things along those lines. And now we're building that capacity within the organization. So it's becoming more of a day-to-day operations. And we're seeing the fruits of that labor as well, where instead of hiring a contractor, we're teaching this capacity and building this capacity within these local governments. So it's just more of business as usual, as opposed to a means to an end for state government grants or loans or something along those lines. And I think that will pay huge dividends in the future.
Representative Kraft, one more.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. Last question. Actually, you kind of touched on it. I'm wondering if you're seeing improvement in the ability of these folks to get grants, maybe not just from the state level, but the federal level.
Mr. LaRue?
Yeah, I think that we are seeing more interest in grants, and that could just because there's more money. It's hard to really correlate cause and effect here with the amount of money that's coming in from the federal government right now. But we're also using this to make people more aware of grants. Like, we bring a lot of that information to our AM champions as state agencies. So there's a lot of things that could be leading to that uptick, but we definitely are seeing an uptick in that area. And I think that in the future, we will start to see more of the needs that weren't represented previously in grants because people simply could not afford the resources to apply for those grants. So I think we're hoping to see a lot more holistic view of the needs within the state through this program as well. So grants are mostly what people can afford to show the state that they need right now. But I think that we're trying to get it to a point where we know the need and we can issue grants to address that need and kind of flip that script.
And I think also to add to that, asset management helps those communities and those asset owners where they need to put those investments and seek those grants, and it helps them put the data and the reason why and justification behind those grant applications. So yes, I think it, if it hasn't already, it will definitely in the future, because they'll understand more of their systems and the impacts of where those dollars need to go, again, to stretch the dollars as far as they can.
Thank you. Representative Gilman.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. So I love this portal idea. Was this the portal it coincides with the asset management readiness scale. Is that a part of the portal? I was just curious about that.
Mr. LaRue or Ms. Kuhn?
Kuhn. Like the letter Q. Kuhn. Go ahead, Ryan. I'll start, and Ryan, you can jump in. The AMRS, the self-assessment, is tied to the Champions program. But they both also point to the portal and the need to work in the portal to help that cross-collaboration as well. But Ryan, if you want to add to that.
Yeah, I'll say that the AMRS really focuses on the need for data, and the portal is the application of that data once you collect it. So I think that it's one of those, like we talk about 1 to 5. I think that step one is saying you need to get an understanding of what your system is, what the components are, get that database of it. And once you have that database, you can start to think comprehensively about it. And the portal is really like that 4 or 5 competency as far as data and data management. So it does build to that, but I think that it starts with the idea that you need to collect data, and then this starts to talk about the value proposition of collecting that data externally, not just internally for your own purposes.
Representative Gilman?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I always think good communicators can change the world, and so having a space where there's really good communication, where people can look, that have many different projects going on, I think is really great. To do that setup, do they have to just custom make that for you, or are other states using something on that same order?
Mr. LaRue?
Yeah, so in 2018, when we first started this endeavor, we were kind of out on our own island here. There wasn't too many options in this space. So over the last 4 years, we did go into an internal development phase, and we have developed our current portal internally with our Department of Technology Management and Budget here within the state. So they have a group of developers that have supported kind of putting together this framework and really kind of getting a beta version of what we were envisioning, and just proving the concept that we could bring people in, that it could be used for collaboration, and that our stakeholders saw value. With that realization and the idea that we need to get this out to 3,300 people, we're constantly looking for iterations to improve this, improve the functionality, and make this better for the users. We went out there in kind of uncharted territory, but the only way that we can really understand that territory is to meet and communicate with our stakeholders. So through those communications, we've started to look at opportunities for commercial products that have become focused in this area over the last couple of years. So we are currently looking at opportunities to expand the functionality and the user interface, leveraging external partners, because this is not a Michigan problem. And as other people are recognizing this, the market is really coming to it and helping us support solutions in this area. And I think that we're open to adopting some of the functionality of those solutions, or looking at those solutions as furthering our journey to date. But definitely this is something that is picking up across the country now that we're seeing it. And I feel like we are on the bleeding edge, and now we're kind of more or less in this pool with a lot of the other states that see a ton of value in this, especially in a high inflation time where you're looking for anything that can kind of stretch those dollars or kind of bring those costs down 10% to 30%, because they're few and far between in this environment.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First off, let me just say thank you to our presenters this morning. I was born a Michigander. I was born in Ann Arbor, so it's always good to hear from my birth state, even though I have forsaken it. And I'll say for a better state, but you can disagree. I want to talk about the Asset Management Readiness Scale, which I think is wonderful. And I specifically want to ask here about how this helps rural or just like not major counties. I'm looking at this map, and I'm encouraged that it's not Wayne County that is the dark blue. It's, I think, the county where Flint is. I think that's Marquette County up in the UP. Can you talk about how counties that don't have the resources of a Wayne County have been helped by this? Is that showing out in your data that places that wouldn't normally get, this sort of guidance are using this resource heavily?
Mr. LaRue?
I'm going to actually give this one to Erin.
Sure, absolutely. Again, it's a really simple tool to use, and we know that our more rural communities, counties, cities, townships that have infrastructure rely heavily. Their DPW directors or DPW departments are typically private consultants. They hire engineering consultants, and they can help them fill out this self-assessment. We have heard from our vendor community that this is a tool they've been looking for years to help their rural customers understand what asset management is and what steps need to be taken, again, to move them along this journey. So we have heard from them that this is a simple tool. It takes, like I said, a lunch hour or less to go through, fill it out. The more you do it, the faster it gets. And it helps everybody to speak the same language. And we've heard from them, praises from them, that they really, really enjoy this as a tool, both the vendor community and those counties that don't have a lot of resources to go out and do training and pay for the training and understand what's going on.
Representative Smith?
Yep. Thank you for that. Secondarily, so this is a larger question, and it might be hard to answer particularly, but Michigan, Minnesota is not a one-party state. We have to do things bipartisanly. And this council is very purposely, when you look at how it's put together, bipartisan, that it's majority, minority leaders in both houses of the legislature and the governor who are appointing people to this council. How has that worked, so to speak? What are some lessons we can take from being able to work together across the aisle? I mean, we're politicians. We all love ribbon cuttings in our districts. But outside of that, what are some ways you've seen that has strengthened being able to actually help your constituents, your people in your state, by working across the aisle?
Ms. Kewen?
Yeah, I would say that politics is not in our conversations at all. So, and it's been great that we were created by a Republican governor, but our current governor, her platform when she was running was fix the damn roads. So that infrastructure and our quality of infrastructure really transcends parties and transcends that political game that we have to play. So the politics just does not enter into our conversation at all with what we're doing. It's about providing and having the most reliable infrastructure for our residents that we can have to help with quality of life, to help with environmental health, and to help with economic development. And that takes the politics really right out of what we do. So we don't, as a council, we don't talk. That doesn't even enter our conversation. So I don't know, Ryan, if you want to add to that.
No, I had just jotted down good outcomes from citizens, like, is really our focus, and that's something that everybody can get on board. And I think that at the level at which we're attacking these problems, there's not a lot of political pressures, and we've been incredibly bipartisan over the last 3 or 4 years as far as infrastructure, and I think that that's really made it very simple for us to avoid those and just focus on outcomes for our citizens.
Representative Smith?
Thank you. I would just say that perhaps no better recommendation for this sort of model than what you said there. So thank you.
Representative Anderson, and then we'll have Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for the presenter. It appears as though your council deals mainly with public infrastructure, but I did see on one of your slides a couple of wind turbines and mentioned renewable energy. Minnesota is going to be embarking on a lot of power line construction projects in the next few years, 15 years or so. So do you get into that at all with certificates of need, routing, that type of thing with power lines? And if you do, what suggestions can you give us for moving that process along smoothly?
Ms. Kewen?
Actually, I'm going to kick that one over to Ryan.
Yes, yeah. Mr. LaRue?
Yeah. I was fortunate enough. I came from the a regulatory agency. So you have the Minnesota PUC, we have the Michigan Public Service Commission, who is primarily focused on that and sits on our non-voting membership as well. So what we've seen is, as rate regulators that the state typically is, there's an opportunity to create incentives for those agencies to participate and be good partners within this. So with that idea and with that opportunity that exists, we have been able to integrate our public utilities directly into this work. One of our members, our voting members, is Marco Brazzano, who is actually a vice president at DTE Energy, who is one of our largest utilities. So we have engaged them, and as we've seen with large transmission lines and things along those things, they're necessary, but they're hard because a lot of the times they go through rural communities and they require a lot of buy-in from a bunch of different stakeholders. So we've been looking at opportunities for better leveraging right-of-ways to kind of grease those skids and make transmission a little bit easier. And just that integrated work is something that the utilities are incredibly interested in as well. So they've been really welcome to the table and have come to the table because they see a ton of opportunity as well. And as we have very high electric rates here in Michigan comparatively to the rest of the Midwest. And once again, if they can save 20 to 30% when they're relocating their lines or locating their lines, I think that that's something that trickles down to the citizens of this state and can put some downward pressure on affordability. So they've been very interested in what we're talking about and the opportunities of integrating with road right-of-ways and pairing with broadband expansion to kind of revitalize their infrastructure at the same time that we're kind of bringing that new broadband into the right-of-way as well. So I think they're seeing a bunch of synergies, and over the last couple of years have seen some of the heartache that comes being co-located in right-of-ways with other public utilities as well, and have really come to the table ready to work with us in order to really promote affordability and be good partners here in the state.
Representative Anderson?
Just one more quick question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
We have plenty of time.
You mentioned roads and breaking up if you have to cut across them. I've heard some crazy high numbers. What are the weight limits of the highways in Michigan, your freeways and your other heavily traveled roads? Any idea what your weight limits are?
Mr. LaRue?
So I can say what I've heard, but I cannot confirm. I do believe we have some of the highest gross weights in the entire country here in Michigan. And as we look at the future and like why our roads have potentially not lived out their potential useful life, I think that we're always looking at the cause and effect as well. So from my understanding, I can't say to a ton or anything along that about the gross weights, but from what I've heard anecdotally, I think that we have the highest weight allowments in the entire country potentially here in Michigan for our trucking industry.
Representative Anderson? Representative Hornstein?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first I wanted to say to Representative Gilman, thank you. I loved your comment, good communicators can change the world. I wrote that down. To our friends in Michigan, thank you for spending so much time with us this morning. I have a question related to the slide beginning the conversation. And you talked about these summits going around the state. That looks really great. That's a wonderful way to hear about the different issues. It looked like there were a lot of public agencies, private interest consultants. Were you able to get a number of just citizens, regular folks at these summits that you had?
Mr. LaRue?
I'm going to pass that over to Erin.
Yes, I can take that one. They were definitely open to the public. We did not have a lot of general public there. They were more specifically targeted to the local asset owners and the issues they were receiving. But we are a public body. The public is welcome to attend our meetings. And through the 30-year infrastructure strategy, we're hoping to reach the public as well as we develop that. And Ryan can probably talk a little bit more about our strategies to reach the public. But really, when we were first created, what we wanted to do is get a good handle of the issues that some of our more rural asset owners were going through. You know, we use this story a lot. We were trying to find Bob, which is what we called him, and it was the DPW director in a rural community that had been there for 40 years. He helped put in all of the infrastructure, so it was all in his head. He knew when every valve was last turned and where everything was. Either Bob retires or Bob passes away, and there all of the institutional knowledge of that system is gone. We found many communities where that happened, and we wanted to know what we could do to help them.
Representative Hornstein?
Yep.
Chair Hornstein?
That's very helpful. Thank you. Just wanted to get a sense of the constituency a little. And then one last question, Madam Chair. And I might have missed this, so I apologize if it was in the presentation. But how many is this have dedicated staff? And if so, how many? Or is it just people from different agencies that, staff up the council?
This one, I think I'm going to be able to get right. Mr. LaRue?
You got it. That is right. So we have a appropriation from the state budget agency of 3 FTEs here in Treasury. But the way that the legislation was written allows us to pull on the technical expertise of Eagle, our DEQ, and MDOT as well. So we have dedicated resources, but we're able to pull from the agencies that have those subject matter experts to really further our causes as well. So it was very intentional that we're administratively housed within Treasury with 3 dedicated staff. But when it comes to how we operate, we try to make sure that we're pulling the brightest and best from those individual asset classes to make sure that we have the right people at the table as we start to talk about transportation or water and things along those lines. So it's really a joint effort across state government, lending technical expertise, but we do have 3 FTEs allocated here in Treasury.
Chair Hornstein.
Thank you. Very helpful. One last question, Madam Chair. And what is the annual budget of the council?
Mr. LaRue?
It is $3.8 million is our annual appropriation at this time. It has gone up over the years. We started with a one-time appropriation to begin. And then as we started to build out the vision and some of the things that we wanted to do and scale those out, we have been able to expand our budget to hopefully achieve those in the future as well.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And Mr. LaRue, has there ever been any thought on to doing kind of a return on investment of that budget? I'm kind of curious on that. I really love ROIs and always want to see that.
Yes, and that is one of the big things around getting that value proposition of coordination right. I think that we could go out there and put some numbers out there about what has been saved in that space. And I agree with you. I think that it will far exceed that annual appropriation. But I think before we put anything out there, we want to be very firm on those numbers and make sure that we're not kind of overstating them and things along those lines. So we're really working to refine that value proposition so that we can calculate an ROI out and just show that this is a good investment from state dollars and that it's returning far in excess of what it's putting in.
Thank you very much. Well, I don't see any other questions from the committee members, so I very much appreciate you guys joining us this morning to testify. And so with that, we will move on to the second second part of our agenda. Is a presentation from the Minnesota Infrastructure Alliance, and they'll be speaking about the work that they've done in Minnesota to track the condition of our infrastructure. You can find a member, or you can find a copy of the presentation in your packets, and Mr. Russ Mathis is a Director of Public Works for the City of Eagan. If you'd like to have a seat, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Cagle. Good morning, committee members. As indicated, my name is Russ Mathis. I'm the Public Works Director for the City of Eagan during the day. Some of my other duties include I'm the chair of the Public Works Assessment, our Public Works Association's Asset Management Committee. So APWA is our organization. And then as far as the Infrastructure Alliance, APWA is a supporter and basically started the Infrastructure Alliance. And so I work with them as well. So you just heard what's happening in Michigan with regards to asset management. Thank you. And I just want to share a little bit about what's happening in Minnesota, what can happen in Minnesota, and maybe what you folks can assist to get us a little bit closer towards what Michigan is doing. So I hope you were interested in what Michigan was presented, and hopefully by the end of my little talk here, you'll be even more excited about it. So I can't even see the pictures, Anna, so sorry about that. So I'm going to fly blind. And all right. So I'm going to suggest that in your roles, every spring, you're hearing a whole lot about infrastructure. And you're getting a lot of requests for repairs, requests for replacements, requests for money to take care of infrastructure. And I do not disagree with any of those statements on needs. They're real needs. But I wonder, like maybe many of you do, is, well, how much is there? How much infrastructure is there? What are the needs? What condition is it in? And what's the value of all that infrastructure? And I'll be honest with you, I'm an infrastructure manager, an owner, in essence, as a public employee. Most infrastructure owners don't have a plan for the future needs of their infrastructure. It's an overwhelming task, and most of us just aren't there. So we operate reactively, not proactively. So what's asset management? We talked a lot about assets already. Assets are anything, basically, that provide value. And so asset management is trying to maximize the value out of those assets. Hopefully we're on an intersection. There we go. So it's a typical intersection in Twin Cities suburb. You could probably guess which suburb it is. I could ask you folks to shout out the assets that you see, but for the sake of time, I'm going to help you out. So next slide. So you're seeing, even though I can't see, you're seeing street lights, you're seeing traffic signals, you're seeing curb and gutter, you're seeing pavement markings, you're seeing sidewalks, you're seeing retaining walls. If you go to the next slide, Anna. What don't you see? Well, we already talked about it in Michigan this morning. You don't see water mains, you don't see storm sewer pipes, you don't see sewer pipes. Next one. So what does asset management cost? Well, it costs less than the savings and inefficiencies that it creates. It provides reduced risk in emergency repairs, which are always costly. It provides cost-effective strategic maintenance opportunities. And overall, it creates more efficient operations. The Dig One examples that the previous presenters indicated, if you recall some of those, they shared a lot of benefits and cost savings for asset management. So next one. Yeah, there you go. All right. Asset management is not a specific software or tool. I used to think that's what it was. I used to think that I could buy this asset management software, and there's a lot of them out there, and that would take care of all my problems. But that's not the solution that we found. It's a culture, and it's a continuing practice within an organization. And so the next slide, I'm just going to start sharing with you some of the ways for us to get started here in Minnesota. All right. And then some of this was talked about by the Michigan folks, but educating your team from top to bottom on the value of asset management. Me being here this morning is part of that, educating you folks on the value of asset management. Determining your asset management guiding principles, that's like most effective efforts that you do, that's an important aspect of it. And then start gathering the asset data. Verbally, the example shared by one of the presenters earlier was the public works director who's been doing it for 40 years, installed everything. Everything's right up here. Well, let's get this out of here so that other people know what's in the ground and what are valuable public infrastructure that we need to take care of and plan to take care of. Identifying when something will likely need to be replaced. There's standards out there for the water main pipe ages, for storm sewer, RCP, reinforced concrete pipe ages and things like that. And then keep an eye on its condition so you can track changes. create a plan, write it down, and then train staff to implement that plan. Organize the data in a user-friendly format. Up here, it's not a user-friendly format, okay? Maybe for that person, but not for everybody else. Plan for future repairs and improvements and estimate the associated costs for long-term financial planning. Got to do that. Okay, next one. What are the goals of asset management? The folks from Michigan shared this a little bit too. It's all about what's best for the public's health and safety, the environment, our economy, and then our quality of life as a whole. So the results of asset management will lead to the right maintenance being done at the right time to extend the life of our infrastructure and maximize that life and reducing long-term costs. Planning to maximize the life of assets for as long as you can afford to do so. Folks from Michigan talked a little bit about just the where they're at, and I'll share where this is. We're in a similar position where we can't afford to do what we need to do. Not right now. We don't have the funding for it. And looking farther into the future, not just having a one-year plan, a two-year plan, not even having a five-year plan. I just presented a 50-year plan to our council so that they could adequately plan the financing for our utility system for the next 50 years. So it's not a surprise 50 years from now. And those folks then have to take this big hit. We can start preparing for that time and the replacement of the current infrastructure that we have. Making budget and utility rate decisions based upon facts, and that's what our council just did. Making it easy to find answers and increasing the efficiency of the systems and the operations even on a day-to-day basis. Next one, there you go. All right, why now? There are a number of challenges for today's infrastructure. All of these listed on the slide you're looking at are relevant and important, but I'll just talk about number five right now. That's a lot of what Michigan's efforts are going towards. I'm struggling with our own infrastructure, just City of Eagan, sewer, water, storm sewer, and streets. All of those have different life expectancies. They were all installed at the same exact time, but they're going to last different lengths of time. So for us to tear open the street to replace the storm sewer that's maybe going to not last as long as the water and the sanitary and not do anything about the water and sanitary at the same time, isn't cost effective. Changing how we take care of our streets. Right now, our streets have a 50 to 60 year life expectancy with proper maintenance. Okay, maybe I need to change that because the pipes, I'm looking at a 75 to 100 year life. So I don't want to replace and reconstruct a street in 60 years and then 15 years later have to tear it all up again. So five's kind of a challenge for me right now. I'm really trying to figure that one out. The infrastructure shares space. We share our own space with our own infrastructure, public infrastructure, but we're sharing the same space with all the private infrastructure as well. Having monthly meetings right now with Lumen or CenturyLink, maybe some of you know it better by that, right now just to coordinate our efforts and their efforts. I was interested in the Dig One example that they shared, the folks from Michigan. We've been doing something like that in Eagan for 20 years. So for 20 years, we're having our annual meeting next week with all the private utility folks that are in Eagan and providing services in Eagan. And we're sharing with them our five-year capital improvement plan so that they can see, here's what we're planning on doing over the next 5 years, much of which is within the public right-of-way. And that's where most of those folks have their services and facilities located. All right. Next one, Anna, please. There are many tools and resources available to aid asset owners. This is an example of the map we're using. GIS is a powerful tool. But a lot of folks aren't implementing the tools or resources that they have unless they're enabled to do so. Many owners are still operating off paper maps, notebooks, memory. That's something, though. At least that's something. But we all need to move further. We need to take asset management to the next level. It's all about getting maximizing the overall life cycles of the assets that we all own, advanced communication with decision makers like yourself or council members, advanced communications with the financial folks so that they can plan and have funding scenarios or options for all of us to consider. And then just as what the Dig One or example that Michigan was talking about, increased opportunity for coordination. I can't just be focused on saving City of Eagan money because it's my customers are also the Lumen customers or the Comcast customers. You know, it's all the same folks. It's taking money from the same people. So we need to work together. All right, next one. There are several resources I think I have listed there that are available to asset owners in Minnesota. Local Road Research Board, I think, is one of the examples on there. State auditors data that they collected within the last half dozen years about the quantities of assets throughout the state at city, county, and state levels. You may or may not be surprised. MnDOT doesn't own the most roads in the state. You know, the cities do. Some public agencies have begun to utilize formalized asset management systems. Eagan has, and there's others that have done likewise. But that said, few of us are fully utilizing the available asset management resources. Something needs to change. Perhaps something similar to what Michigan is doing. So we've got a lot of different efforts that we're making currently. We have American Public Works Association has a website, Raise Our Grade. I don't know if any of you have gone there before, but we're trying to educate the public on specific projects within their districts or within your districts so that folks can see the need that is out there. A large part of the benefit of asset management for Eagan is transparency. I can take a feasibility report level and share with folks, here's what we're planning on doing over the next 5 years. Got any questions about it? Here's the information I have to the best, you know, of our ability. And then as we move along in that process, that map that the one slide showed was Eagan, folks from the community can go and click on their neighborhood and see what projects are planned in the next few years and see what the cost is of those, and they can kind of follow those. They can follow those through the process as it goes to the council, as projects are approved, as plans and specs are approved, as contracts are awarded, and construction is actually scheduled. And then afterwards, if they're accessible projects, they can also go there and see that information as well. So a lot of transparency with asset management, but I'm going to stop here, and I'm happy to answer any questions or continue the conversation with you folks.
Thank you, Mr. Mathis. First up on the list is Chair Hornstein.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Mathis. You had mentioned in your presentation that the life cycle of a road is 60 years. Where are we at with many of our roads right now within that cycle? And one of the reasons I ask is we had a presentation in the Transportation Committee a few weeks ago from MnDOT, and you know they shared with us a fairly alarming statistic. We had this yesterday from the counties too. 10% of our roads will be in rated poor condition by 2030. And so feels like we're pretty late in that cycle, but if you could maybe shed some light on that.
Sure. Madam Chair and Committee Member Hornstein, I'm just going to clarify. I said 50 to 60 year life for roads in Eagan.
Okay.
Well, Eagan has
you can confine it to Eagan, too. however you feel comfortable on the record answering the question, I'm fine with that.
And just for, and I'll further clarify that Eagan has a pavement management program and has had one for 30 plus years.
And I'm not accusing Eagan of having poor roads.
No. And I'm not receiving that. But there's a purpose for me providing this information.
Okay.
Not all public agencies have a pavement management program.
Yeah.
Okay. So asset management helps encourage or leads to having pavement management programs. Pavement management programs are a form of an asset management program. And so without that, I would say that roads are easier to manage because we see them, we drive over them, we feel them. You know, the water main, the sanitary sewer, and the storm sewer pipes, most of you folks in this room have probably never seen one once it's placed in the ground. So I don't know where we are as a whole at the state level for the condition of our roads, but the condition of our roads that you see are crying out for us to do something along this line. They're crying out for asset management as a whole, not just for the roads. I mean, that's what they're definitely crying out specifically for. But as a whole, they're a great evidence of the need for doing something along these lines for all agencies.
Representative Hornstein?
Thank you. That's a very helpful perspective to have. I appreciate it.
Representative Clardy?
First of all, thank you for the presentation. Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. My question is kind of twofold. You're talking about long-term planning and the importance of asset management. So let's say Egan has done that. So now all of a sudden there's a Vikings complex. How does something that's so unexpected go into this formula, and what kind of data do you use to recalculate?
Great question. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee member. When we have an asset management system, we understand that we know what we have in our systems. We understand the size of the pipes. If we're talking about getting water to a Vikings type of development or any development, we know what the capacity of the system is, both on a sewage, on a drainage perspective as well. We know what the age and condition of the roads are. And so when someone comes in with a development proposal, we get information from them, and they're required to provide us data that says this is what their needs are going to be from a water usage perspective. This is what their drainage or their runoff calculations are going to be, and what the storm sewer system is going to have to provide the capacity for in order to address their development. Here's what the traffic impacts are going to be, and so the width of the road or the types of traffic or intersection controls and things such as that. So when public agencies have an asset management system, they understand fully what they have, and they understand the capacity and the needs, replacement needs and such, so that when a development proposal comes along and they provide the information as far as what their needs are going to be or what demands they're going to put on the system, we easily can review that and compare that to what we already know. And then we can understand fully, okay, well, in order to meet their needs, we're going to have to put in a larger size pipe from point A to point B. We're going to have to widen the roads or put turn lanes in from point A to point B. We're going to have to put in a roundabout, at both ends of the project in order to accommodate their demand based on their development. So without that, public agencies the public agencies fully understanding their system, that can be challenging and mistakes can be made. And then those can have significant impacts on the development, or they can have significant impacts on the community as a whole.
Representative Clardy?
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the answer. Just a follow-up. So I am so sure that you did not plan on a Vikings complex like 50 years ago or 20 years ago or 10 years ago when you planned this. So now that has some kind of impact on what future plans were. So my question is just how do you fix that? I understand that you have a plan, but how do you fix it?
Mr. Mathis?
Madam Chair, committee member. As part of being in the metropolitan area, the Met Council requires that we do a 10-year update on our guide plans, And so that's something we're accustomed to doing as things change and happen throughout that 10-year period. We're updating and creating changes, recognizing the changes that have occurred over the last 10 years and the impacts that have occurred. So that's something we're accustomed to. I mean, definitely, I didn't plan on the Vikings coming, and neither did anybody else. But we were ready for that. We had already looked at, in that area in particular, regional transportation needs or demands and made projections in the future. And we had already made improvements on highways 55 and 149 for those future demands and needs. And we can't take anything and stuff it into that portion of Egan. There had to be limits on what we could actually take, but the Vikings development fit what we were already recognized we were able to handle. So transportation-wise, we were ready. We honestly finished up the highway improvements, and the city oversaw those, even though they're MnDOT roads, to address those future needs, because we knew something was going to happen there. I'll be honest with you, sanitary sewer-wise, we were aware that things could happen, and the council was open to having things happen that might require an increase or an improvement for what we had, and then that is happening. So we recognize, because of the information that we had, that if something bigger happens, that we might have to make changes, and we're doing that with the sanitary sewer. But transportation-wise, we were ready because that fit. You know, it's like anything. You can't fit 20 pounds into a 5-pound spot, but we were ready for the 5 pounds. So
thank you. It sounds like because of your forward thinking and planning that you were able to kind of attract some of that development too. So I don't have any other members. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I have a question about the page where you have the challenges for today's infrastructure. I serve on the city council in Chanhassen, and I'm looking at the part about climate change, part four. You know, we're talking about planning, and it's written here, because of climate change and the resulting new weather conditions, some future operating conditions are unknown. And I'm wondering, when you're looking into the future, where are you getting information? How are you? I know we're dealing with the unknown, but what are you doing to plan for the future?
Mr. Mathis?
Madam Chair and committee member, so there are standards that you use for stormwater calculations in particular. And when I'm making references to that, that's what I'm thinking. So those have been upgraded. So when we design the city from a stormwater or drainage perspective, we use these older standards. So now what we've done is we've implemented the newer standards, and we've taken a look at the system as a whole, and we've recognized that there's areas that may have met the former standards, but they're not currently meeting the new standards. And so we're prioritizing those. So because we have an asset management system, that's an aspect, whereas maybe the pipe is not old or declining, but there's a higher risk of potential flooding in those areas where the pipe size, because of the new standards that are being used, because of the pipes, current pipe size, we may place a higher prioritization on replacing that pipe sooner. Again, not because of age, not because of condition, but because of the higher potential or risk of flooding due to the higher standards with changes in the weather systems. So does that make sense?
Representative Reed?
Yes, thank you. Well, I'm just curious, like, are there certain resources that you're using, you know, different, like the University of Minnesota, have they been providing help in that way, or?
Mr. Mathis?
There's computer models that we use. So basically, it's as simple as just changing the standard. You may have often heard of a 100-year storm event. I would prefer to say a 1% storm event, because I've probably seen 200 or 300-year events in the last 10 years. But so rather than that, in Egan, there was a 25% increase in that 100-year or 1% storm event. That's significant. So changing the model so that a 1% event goes from a 6-inch rainfall to a 7.5-inch rainfall, that makes significant changes on the flooding potentials and the risk. So that's how we utilize that. And then so that, again, with an asset management system, you can change that. That can become a legitimate reason or rationale for prioritizing that pipe system or that section of pipe over another pipe section or segment. So,
Representative Reed.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Any other member questions? Seeing none, then. I appreciate your testimony. That it concludes our agenda for the day. Our next hearing will take place on February 21st at 8:30, and I guess just keep an eye on your mailbox. I will plan to be in the state office building. Representative Ferns.
Madam Chair, the OLA came out today. We just all got an email about the sustainable building guidelines. Yeah. So I'm wondering if we will be able to hear that OLA report in this committee.
That's a good suggestion, Representative Franson. And I actually met with them yesterday to get a briefing on that OLA.
I met with them last
yeah.
week.
Yeah. So I think that's a really good suggestion. We'll see if we can figure something out and fit it in. I know I want to look at their recommendations and make sure that we are addressing those recommendations.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, members, with that, our meeting is adjourned.